Hey, so I want to take care of a little business before we get to today's question. A few episodes ago, we asked you to send us your favorite underused word, a word that you love and that you want other people to love too. And hundreds of you sent in submissions. With the help of a dictionary editor, we narrowed them down to three choices: pregret, nibbling, and pastracted. Which one belongs in the dictionary? You voted, and we have a winner.
Hello, this is Michael.
So, Michael, I'm calling with some official news.
Oh my God, I hope it's good news.
The ELT listening community has voted. Are you ready for the results?
I have never been more ready for anything in my life.
America's next top word is nibbling.
Oh man, that was so satisfying. Thank you so much for making sure I got that in such dramatic fashion.
Your submission, nibbling, the gender-neutral one-word substitute for nieces and nephews, got the most votes. How do you feel?
I am so thrilled. I mean, it was great to see democracy in action, you know? I watched those votes come in, and I felt like the people really spoke.
Yes, your word did seem to strike a chord. We even got voicemails about it.
I was very excited to hear nibbling as one of the options. So when I saw this word had a chance to make it to the dictionary, I knew I had to support it.
It would be so useful to us estate planners, people who write wills. So we can say siblings, but there is no such word, no class word for nieces and nephews.
My husband and I have tons of nieces and nephews. It would be so useful to be able to say nibblings.
I voted for nibbling because I am one. And as a non-binary person, nibbling helps me feel included and accepted.
Okay, so Michael, we have our word. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Now we have to get it into the dictionary. Now it's time to do the work.
Oh, man.
So if you remember, we consulted a professional lexicographer, someone who has actually added words to the dictionary. And here's what she said we have to do. So first, we have to find every instance of nibbling used in print ever and document it. We basically need to pull together a portfolio that proves nibbling has been around for a while.
Okay.
So to build a really strong case, this is going to be a ton of work.
Okay.
But it's not just on you.
Ah, thank God.
We're going to ask our listeners to help too.
Okay, great.
Listeners, if you need a distraction right now, here's how you can help us get nibbling added to the dictionary. First, we need to build that portfolio. So if you see nibbling used in print or hear it on TV or on social media, any nibbling sighting at all, let us know. The second thing to do is use nibbling yourself in writing and conversation. A tweet here, a line in a mystery novel there. Anything in print helps our cause. Send us those receipts at ELT Show on Instagram and Twitter, or at ELT@gimletmedia.com, or of course, 833-RING-ELT. Okay, let's get to today's question. It's about how tiny humans used to stuff their tiny faces.
Hi, my name is Kate. I'm so interested in understanding what people did before bottle nipples. Did babies just die before that? If they couldn't nurse directly from the source, what happened there? Man, I have so many questions. I'm probably going to have to make another phone call. But thank you. Bye.
Hello?
Hey, Kate. It's Flora from ELT.
Hi.
How are you guys doing? Everybody okay?
We are. Everyone's healthy and set. We're good.
Have you been isolating?
We have been hard. Yeah. We're just tired of each other, but we're good.
What about highs and lows? Any highs and lows from quarantine so far?
Highs, I think just the togetherness and the slower schedule. So it's kind of great to just be pajama people together and play board games.
Okay, but the lows? Don't skimp on the lows.
Oh, man. The lows have got to be the public homeschooling. I have 5 kids, and so y'all, like, send some prayers. It's happening, but oh, man.
Have you sent anyone to detention yet?
I almost sent a kid to out-of-school suspension, only I didn't know where to actually send said child, so... But I made my children start calling me Mrs. Watson during school time because I couldn't handle the mom anymore.
So you called back in simpler times. Should we take a moment to put ourselves in that mindset back when our idle thoughts were about the other kind of nursing?
Yes, let's like blur out this scene and go back to that one.
Blurred. Okay, so in your message, you said, you want to know what parents did to feed their babies before the bottle as we know it. So why was this on your mind?
I'm currently nursing. I have a 15-month-old, but I think when I called, she was well under a year. And then I have several friends who are having babies as well. And it made me just kind of go, what if you had a baby that would not take a breast before there were bottles? What happened? What did you do?
It's a great question, and we found just the person to answer it.
Yeah, hi, Kate.
This is Julie Dunn. She's an archaeologist and chemist in Bristol in the UK, and Julie's known as the Pot Lady.
Pot Lady, yeah.
Why?
It's because she's a pothead. She has pot on the brain all the time. 427, she's a stoner. Stoneware is her thing. That is Julie.
So I assume we're discussing clay pots.
Correct.
Okay, good. Good, good, good.
But here's the thing. Julie's holy grail isn't the grail itself. It's what was in the grail.
One of the most important things that I work on is ancient diet. For me, it's learning how ordinary people lived in the past. If you think about just us today, we go out for meals with our friends and that's how we socialize, but that's what people did in the past. They might have enormous feasts maybe to celebrate events. So when they were still building Stonehenge, for example, we know that people would get together and slaughter lots and lots of pigs and put them on big barbecues and brew lots of beer and have a massive party because, you know, they just spent days, weeks, months building an astonishing monument.
I can totally understand the appeal of wanting to work in ancient diets. As someone who spends inordinate amounts of time planning their dinner every night, this makes sense to me as an area of focus.
Yeah, me too.
So here's what Julie does specifically. She chemically analyzes the residue of prehistoric cookware.
I'm very intrigued by this.
Yeah, she looks for the molecular crumbs of super old food. Basically the leftover munchies that time forgot.
Sweet.
And this is why she's the pothead we called to answer your question. What did people do when they couldn't breastfeed? Julie just dug up the answer.
Yeah. So actually, until last year, we didn't really know the answer to that.
What?
Until last year, yeah. When I did the work.
We'll tell you what Julie dug up after the break. Here's how Julie the Pot Lady's discovery went down. A colleague tipped Julie off about a bunch of unusual vessels found in Europe.
She said to me, oh, look, have you seen these? And I sort of said, well, no. God, I didn't even know there was such a thing, you know, and nor had anyone I know.
They were 2,000 to 3,000 years old, and they were just so unusual looking.
What they look like.
All right. So just like human beings, there are a lot of different versions of these vessels. And just like human beings, some are cuter than others. And because I know what our listeners want, I'm going to send you the cutest ones.
Fantastic.
Prepare yourself, Kate. An adorable photo is waddling like a baby duck right to your phone.
Okay.
And for everybody else, you can see it right now on Spotify on the episode page, and we'll put it on Instagram at ELT Show.
Okay, I think I just got it. Oh my goodness, they look like little animals.
I know. Aren't they gorgeous? Very often they have the most amazing little shapes. They've got little heads and feet and ears, and they're the cutest little things in the world.
Okay, so for everybody listening, picture a vessel like a cup about the size of a baseball with a head on one end.
Yeah, they have like a little face. It's like a little kangaroo.
I know. And then there are little legs coming out of the bottom of the cup, so it stands on its own. And then there's a spout. Anything jumping out to you about the location of the spout?
Well, I feel like, oh, is it the taily end?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's, it is a little like backwards, I feel like. It's clearly this critter's rear.
You drink from this delightful little animal's butthole.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
I know. Yes. But still, they obviously thought it was funny because they could have done it the other way around, I suppose. But yeah.
Mm.
Okay. So these are adorable little handheld cups molded into the shape of animals, which made Julie and her colleagues wonder, were these for babies? Could these be ancient baby bottles? I mean, given the spout placement, they could also be gravy boats. So Julie had to test the hypothesis. So she got the vessel into the hands of a tiny product tester.
My colleague, her friend had a young baby, and they made a replica and put milk in it and gave it him, and he loved it. It really fitted very naturally in his hands, and he wouldn't let go of it, and he used it for ages and ages and ages.
Do you want to see a picture of a baby drinking from it?
Absolutely, I do.
Okay.
Aww. He's on that thing.
Loved it.
That's a solid little baby latch right there.
He's still using it today. He's 28. One other clue that they were for babies is a little bit less cute.
Uh-oh.
They were found in child graves.
Oh, see, I knew there was going to be a sad side to all this. But like still kind of sweet that they gave them their little favorite sippy when they went, oh. So you said she tested stuff, like analyzed the contents. So did she do that with these?
Exactly. To seal the deal that these were really bottles, Julie had to analyze them to see what they held. So, like, if it turned out to be marinara sauce, that whole these were baby bottles and not gravy boats thing would be cooked.
Yeah, because I don't think they were doing marinara back then. I'd have been very, very surprised, yes, to be honest. In fact, I don't think they had tomatoes.
Right, right.
So Julie flies to Vienna to look at these vessels and to sample a few of them. And when she shows up, she is shaking in her lab coat.
Well, what I do is destructive. I literally had to take a modeling drill and put it inside these vessels and actually just drill out enough powder to do our chemical analysis on. And it was quite nerve-wracking because it's only clay and it's thousands of years old is a bit of a responsibility. And I was terrified. Plus, I had an audience.
So. What do you mean you had an audience?
Well, everyone in the Institute wanted to see how I sampled. So I had to do this pretending like I did it every day. And, you know, look terribly professional. But at the same time, inside, I was thinking, oh, my God, if this breaks, if anything breaks, they're going to see it break and I'm going to die.
But she didn't die because this is one pothead who doesn't crack under pressure. When you finished, did people clap?
I don't remember, actually. If they didn't, they should have.
So Julie had her little baggie of pot. She analyzed it, and she got a big old hit on three of the vessels she tested. Do you want to guess what she found?
Well, I would hope it would be milk.
Bolognese.
No, but We found that the pots were used to process milk.
Animal milk.
So fantastic, because, you know, you would assume that, you know, little baby vessels were going to be used to give babies milk.
So this was the last straw. Julie was convinced these were baby bottles. So what did this invention mean for people? Julie said they're not just adorable artifacts. They were an innovation, and they had a huge impact.
Essentially, these baby bottles are why we live like we do today.
Julie says when these kind of vessels first show up around 7,000 years ago, there's a population boom in Europe, a boom driven by the newest fad, locally sourced produce, aka agriculture.
Okay.
So Julie's theory, and not every baby bottleologist agrees, is that these little vessels might have played a role in that population boom. Julie says, and I'm just lightly paraphrasing here, that these bottles gave women a lactation vacation, a breast rest, meaning weaning happened earlier, and because of this nursing interspersing, women got pregs on the regs. That meant an end to the birth dearth and a dawning of the spawning. Less latching led to more hatching.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah?
Yeah. As a nursing mom, if you're able to take a break, if you're able to train your baby to get off of you, then the world opens up a little bit. And I bet women were getting other stuff done and getting other stuff done too, right? And then more babies.
I don't want to put words in Julie's mouth, but basically her argument is that these baby bottles are directly responsible for all those baby and me yoga classes.
I love it. That's a crunchy community, though. Don't bring up bottles there.
So what do you think, Kate? Does this satisfy your thirst for baby bottle facts? Any other questions?
How long were these around?
These were around for thousands of years.
And interestingly, they do really carry on throughout prehistory. So we know there's lots of them in ancient Greece. We know the Romans used very similar vessels. I've come across some in Africa, in Sudan. Somebody sent me some from Plains Indian communities. So the shape is, I suppose it's like an optimal shape.
I love that. I love these little teeny tiny baby bottle, sippy cup, kangaroo stoneware pieces. And it gives me like a more hopeful picture of the past, that they were just cute little babies still with little bottles.
Yes. You know, you could just make little utilitarian vessels that do the job. If you choose to go to the trouble of making these lovely little pots, it's a real expression of love, I think.
Maybe I should go chisel a little stone sippy.
Yeah, is this giving you any ideas?
Yeah, I'm super quarantined right now. So what else am I doing? Let me go find a rock. Be right back.
Before we go, a shout out. On last week's show, we asked you to call in and tell us who you're grateful to right now. So many of you did, so I thought we could share them on the show.
Hi, ELT. I wanted to give a shout out to my sister-in-law, Ashley Goodwin, who's been working 18-hour shifts in the ICU at her local hospital. She's been overwhelmed and going crazy, but she's doing a darn good job. And I love her so much, and she listens to this show when she has a break. So, love you, Ashley. Good job, lady.
Keep those shout outs coming. And if you have a burning question you cannot find an answer to, give us a ring. 833-RING-ELT.
Every Little Thing is produced by Emily Foreman, Phoebe Flanagan, Annette Heist, and Flora Lichtman, with help from Nicole Pasulka and Doug Barron. Our consulting editors are Caitlin Kenny and Jorge Just. Scored by Bobby Lord, Emma Munger, So Wiley, and Dara Hirsch. Mixed by Dara Hirsch. I love marinara. goodbye.